Welcome everyone to the DC Kin Care Alliance podcast. Today is Monday, October 19th, 2020. I'm Marla Spindell, the Executive Director of DC Kin Care Alliance, and I'm joined by my colleague and Deputy Director, Stephanie McClellan. We're thrilled to have special guest Marie Cohen with us today, a child advocate, researcher, and policy analyst. She is joining us for a second time to discuss her September 28th blog post from the Child Welfare Monitor DC entitled, CFSA's Internal Child Fatality Report Leaves Out More Than Half of Dead Children Known to the System. Welcome, Marie.
Good morning, Marie.
Good morning.
What I'd like to start with today is to give people an overview of how child fatality is looked at in the district and who the groups are that review child fatalities and what the purpose is of each group. I know there's two different groups. One is the Child Fatality Review Committee, which we know you have participated in for several years. And then there's also the Child Fatality Review Unit that's within Child and Family Services, and it's an internal review process. Can you tell us a little bit about the differences between the two groups and what the purposes of each of them is?
Yes, absolutely. The first group you mentioned, the Child Fatality Review Committee, is located in the office of the Chief Medical Examiner. And there are several staff members who track down information. And then the actual committee is composed of people who are members by virtue of what agency they work for, like Department of Health. And there are a few members like myself who are community members. And this committee reviews all death, regardless of the cause of death, of all district residents from birth through age 18. And it also reviews the deaths of youths who are aged 19 to 21 if they were known to child welfare within 4 years of when they died, or if they were known to disability services or juvenile justice programs in the 2 years before they died. So that's the mandate of that committee. And that committee receives the information about the fatalities, in general, I think, from the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner. And we issue a report every year on all the fatalities we reviewed in that year, most of which would have occurred in a previous year. And it could have been even 3 or 4 years ago. So in the most recent report, the deaths reviewed were from 2014 to 2018. And then we have CFSA's Internal Child Fatality Review Committee that you mentioned. The committee consists of different people from the agency representing different offices, and they look at quite a smaller group of fatalities than the citywide committee. They look at all known fatalities of children whose families were known to CFSA within 5 years of the child's death. Known fatalities of children whose families were known to CFSA within 5 years of the child's death. So if there was even a report to CFSA about them that nothing happens with that report, or an investigation that might have been closed with no findings, or an investigation that might have been opened, or maybe the child was in foster care, or maybe the family had an in-home case. If any of that happened within 5 years, and if they found out about it, that would be reviewed. But there are clearly going to be cases where the child died in another jurisdiction and they never know about it. So clearly they're not looking at all the deaths. In the past, this report, like the Child Fatality Review Committee report, included all fatalities reviewed in each calendar year. So if it was the 2018 report, it was all reports reviewed in 2018, most of which would have not occurred in 2018, but earlier, because it takes a while to determine a cause of death and have it be reported and all that. But this year, they decided only to look at the reports that they reviewed this year that actually occurred in that calendar year. But I guess we'll get into that more later. But I think that answers the general question about what is the difference between those two reports.
So that gives us a great idea about sort of the differences between the two committees. Can you tell me what the purpose, the point of the Child Fatality Review Committee is? Like, why does it exist?
The purpose is to identify systemic issues that contributed to the fatality so that if these issues could be fixed, maybe that child wouldn't have died. So I think that's the purpose of both of them. we're not doing this for any other reason than to fix the system, to try to learn from these fatalities so that maybe they could be avoided in the future if we could address those systemic issues. In my blog, I took a little bit of issue with the way the internal group characterized their purpose, because they said that it's important to reduce preventable child deaths. And I said, well, it should really be broader than that, because child deaths are just kind of the tip of the iceberg, and a child might not die, and a child might be just living in an abusive or extremely neglectful home and have their whole development, psychological and their intellectual and emotional development, warped by this continued abuse and neglect. So I think really should be broader than just reducing child death. It should be protecting children better and responding to abuse and neglect better so that children aren't left in those situations. Death preventable, and how can we reduce the probability of such deaths in the future? But I've always felt like it's more than that. It's improving the system's response to abuse and neglect so that children don't remain in those situations.
So would it be fair to say that the CFRC, the external committee that's combined of a variety of different agencies, looks more broadly at systems in district government that have been involved in the life of this child prior to the child's death, and that the internal review that CFSA does, the CFR unit, is more focused on the prior contact that that child has had with specifically the Child and Family Services Agency?
Yeah, and I think that's fair, and that makes sense, right? Because they're looking at how can we improve our own agency. I don't think they make recommendations to other agencies. It really wouldn't have any teeth. On the Child Fatality Review Committee, it's not specifically geared at CFSA. We spend just as much time looking at other, it might be education, or it might be health, or it might be the health system, or it might be the hospital. So yeah, it's just a much broader mandate.
Over the course of your experience as a social worker and on the committee and just looking at child welfare, have you seen that the reports that are issued that have various recommendations have resulted in any kind of change in a systemic mm-hmm. way? Or is there any way to know if changes have been made to ensure better outcomes generally for children?
The agencies do have to respond to the recommendations and say, if do they accept the recommendation or do they not accept it? And sometimes they don't accept it. And I can't even remember if we track what happens to the recommendations, but I don't think so, but I might be wrong on that.
So there's no place to look or anyone that's reviewing whether the recommendations are being implemented. If they are being implemented, whether they're addressing appropriately
right.
the concerns that were raised.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was going to say for the internal group, I think they do report on last year's recommendations, and often they're always say that they were either fulfilled or they're in progress, but nobody's looking over their shoulder to say, well, did this actually address it, you know?
Even if they, quote, completed the minutiae of the recommendation,
right.
did it
right.
actually make a difference in the outcome? We don't know the answer
right.
to that.
Right, right.
Marie, I just want to focus a little bit now on the reports that each of
okay.
these groups issue. So we know that each group, the CFRC and the CFR unit, each put out a report every year about the cases, the child deaths that they've reviewed in that year. And we know from what you said previously that cases that are reviewed in a calendar year will have actually occurred. The deaths will have occurred, some in that year, but some in previous years, right?
Right.
So my question to you is, in looking at both the reports that cover deaths over several years, are we able to look at either or both of those reports and determine how many children die in the district each year from abuse and neglect?
No, absolutely not. But it's for several reasons. Remember that neither of the committees looks just at abuse and neglect. Okay, that's number one, right? Because that's not a criteria for either committee to choose. One committee, the bigger one that I'm on, looks at all child fatalities. and then some for 19 to 21-year-olds. And then the other committee, the CFSA committee, the criterion is that the family has to have been involved in CFSA. So, for example, in this year's report, one quarter of the deaths were due to abuse and neglect, and one quarter were due to natural causes, and one quarter were due to accident, and one quarter were due to non-abuse homicides. So neither one's limited to abuse and neglect. But the more important point is we can't know how many deaths were due to abuse and neglect in a given year because each report is a combination of years. And also, there's no guarantee that we know about all of them. So even if you wanted to keep a spreadsheet with the deaths from each year and then after 5 years count up the ones you have from a particular year, you wouldn't know that you have all of them for various reasons. The medical examiner will decide if it's a child abuse death, or then it could be neglect, which I don't think that's one of their categories at all. And then CFSA will also investigate if the case is sent to them, and they may say this was an abuse death, but the medical examiner may call it a undetermined. So, yeah, there's absolutely no way to know it. One thing that I should mention, but I would have to look this up because I had this in the report and then I took it out. There is an ostensible count, just a count, of abuse and neglect deaths in every state and the district that is given to the federal government for its annual child maltreatment report. And I had that in there and I just took it out because it was already confusing enough, right? And it's not a report or an analysis, it's just a number. That's how many deaths the CFSA know and that they count and report to the federal government and don't do anything else with. Deaths where the cause of death is abuse or neglect. So I don't know where they're getting that, but that is supposed to be the count of child abuse and neglect deaths every year. But again, it depends on all the same things. Do they know about it? And was the finding accurate? So basically, no, we don't have this number anywhere, and I don't think the district is different from other jurisdictions in that way.
Interestingly, I submitted a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act request, mm-hmm. to the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner asking for a breakdown of child death by manner, cause, and relationship of the person committing the death of a child.
Okay.
And the response was, all of the data collected by OCME on child homicides are set forth in the Child Fatality Review Committee annual report. We don't capture the relationship status of the person committing the homicide systematically in our case management system.
Interesting.
When I first started looking at child fatalities in the district, it came as a big shock to me that it's no one's job to count how many children in the district die from abuse and neglect each year. And I find it incredibly difficult to understand how we can know whether what is currently being done is working and whether or not it's sufficient when we don't know how many kids are being killed each year in the district. We don't know if that number is going up, and we don't know if that number is going down, and we don't know what that number reflects. So one of the things that's really important in government oversight is determining if an agency is doing their job. With CFSA, the mission is to prevent abuse and neglect of children. But we have no way of knowing the way things are right now, if that's happening, whether this year was better than last year or worse than last year or the same. So that brings me to my next broader question to you. You recently wrote a great blog article about some concerns that you had regarding the CFR unit, the internal CFSA report for 2019. And I just wanted you to talk a little bit for our listeners about what concerns you had about that report and what caught your attention as being different from previous years. So, Marie, one of the things that you mentioned in your blog was a concern for you in the Child Fatality Review Unit's report for 2019 was that this is the first year that the report doesn't cover all the deaths that were reviewed in that year. It only covers
the deaths that actually occurred in 2019 as well as being reviewed in 2019 and not the previous years. Can you tell us a little bit more about that concern and why that stood out to you?
Yeah, well, that really bothered me a lot because that committee, just like the one I'm on, they get together and they sit down and they meet and they talk about these fatalities. And they did that with 33 fatalities during the year. But the report only covered 13 out of those 33. And those 13 were the ones that actually occurred in 2019. So those are the ones that were reviewed relatively quickly, because often the other fatalities that they reviewed, the other 20, occurred in prior years, mostly 2017 and 2018, because often it takes that long for them to know about it. It might take a while before the medical examiner reveals the cause of death. It might take a while before anyone tells them about it. And then I know this is really strange because I started looking at the numbers and they have this way that they do everything with percentages. And I always kind of laugh at that. To me, when we only have 13, it's easier to just give the numbers. That's a really small number. So I start thinking, well, why is it so small? And then realize that in other years, they looked at all the fatalities that they reviewed in that year. Why did they change it this year? They didn't say why. They only said that they only covered the ones that occurred this year, and they didn't say why. So to me, the problem is, why did they decide to do that? And you've got such a much smaller statistical base. Child fatalities are very uncommon, thank God, but you want to study all of them to get as much as possible. You know, the more you have, the more, I don't want to say it's not technically statistically significant, but it's more if you can say, well, the deaths were divided evenly among four different causes. If I had 30 instead of 13, that would be more powerful to me. So why throw out information that you have? So I was just dismayed. Why would they want to throw out more than half of the information they have? Just because the information is very, very useful, and we would want to have it in order to prevent future fatality.
Well, it also, just from the public's right to know, they reviewed 33. They gave us information about 13. And so there's 20 fatalities that occurred presumably in 2018, 2017, and possibly 2016 that we're never going to know anything about. There's no place to get that information, right?
Right, exactly. If every year is like this year, we're never going to find out about more than half of them.
Just as an aside, in the 2018 annual internal committee report, they did state that any fatalities they found out about after 2018 would be included in the 2019 report, and then they didn't do that.
Oh, that's a really good point. Right, right, because that's what they always did. Yeah, that's a really good point.
Marie, I want to talk a little bit about the family contacts with CFSA prior to the death of the child. Of the 13 children who died that were reviewed by CFSA, there's deaths that occurred in 2019 and were also reviewed in 2019. Can you talk a little bit about what kind of contact each of those families had before the child's death?
Right, sure. Okay. Of course, by definition, they all had contact with CFSA because they're not looking at anything but that. Certainly, if you were able to look at all child fatalities in the district, you wouldn't find that they all had contact with CFSA. So that's one point to make. But these are the ones that had contact because CFSA is using this to try to learn what could we have done to save this child. So they found that all of them had some contact. But over 3/4 or 10 of those families had an open case or an investigation within 5 years of the fatality. So the other three only had one or more screened out referrals. So their contact with CFSA was not a whole lot. It was a referral, or maybe it was a lot of referrals because they don't tell us that, but they only had calls that were screened out. So we had 10 who had an open case or investigation within 5 years of the fatality. Out of the 10, 6 of them had 4 or more reports to CFSA. That's kind of a lot, right? And 9 out of the 10 had 2 or more reports. 8 families had at least one investigation. The ones that didn't have an investigation, they had a family assessment, which is kind of like an investigation light, and those aren't being done anymore, but that just FYI. So if the 8 had an investigation, One of these families had a total of 10 investigations. Another had 7, and 2 had 5. So sometimes a whole lot of contacts.
Is there any way to connect the number of contacts that a family had with CFSA and then the manner of death for the child? For example, if there were 10 contacts and the child subsequently died of an abuse homicide, that's a different evaluation than if there were 10 prior contacts with CFSA and the child died of a heart condition. Is there any way to match those two up?
Not from the report, right, because they don't do that. One of my points is that I would also like to see a full case study, like some of the state ombudsmen or child advocates or inspectors general do, because you know, with a case, you see what happened and where the touch points might have turned out differently.
It just seems to me that the lessons that you would take away from 10 contacts with CFSA and then the child is murdered by a family member versus 10 contacts and the child dies from a heart condition, it's hard to know what could be done differently when you
right.
don't even know what happened to take the lessons away from.
Right. Although one of the points I made was that it's not just the abuse and neglect deaths that might have been prevented by CFSA, because all of the accidental deaths, the quote accidental deaths, had to do with unsafe sleep. And perhaps those could have been prevented. Then there were 3 deaths that were homicide. I know from my personal experience that a lot of times when a young person ends up being a victim of homicide, that child might have been involved in gangs or in violent behavior, and that's what led to the homicide. And often, if you look at the history of those kids, there might be a long CPS history with a lot of educational neglect, with a lot of mental health issues and drug issues among the parents. So again, could those homicides have been prevented many, many years ago if that family had been helped, or in the worst case, if that child had been removed from the home? And even with the natural deaths, probably with natural deaths, couldn't have been prevented by CFSA doing something different in the past 5 years. But I think all the other 3 categories of abuse and neglect, non-abuse homicide, and accidents, there's a possibility. I'm not saying definitely that CFSA could have prevented these deaths. I'm just saying there is a possibility.
Yeah, we don't know what prevention measures might have helped, but there might have been some prevention services that could have helped
right.
to address this, as you said, a long time ago. And even for the natural causes, because they don't tell us what they are, but we do know CFSA had involvement with that family prior to the death. We don't know
right.
all of
right.
the surrounding circumstances to determine if there could have been some prevention measures.
Right, right.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it concerns me a lot that we can't tell the difference between a child that passes away from, I don't know, some horrible childhood cancer versus a child that passed away due to asthma attack, but there was a case for medical neglect that was screened out before, and that maybe that child should have been getting medical therapy. Maybe that child didn't have an inhaler and should have. If we don't know what happened, I have no idea how we're supposed to take lessons away from that or make intelligent recommendations about what should happen in the future.
Or even if the child has asthma and they're living in a home with mold and other environmental toxins, and the agents maybe could have implemented certain preventive measures to alleviate some of the environmental toxins, either in the current housing situation or perhaps helping to get another housing situation. So there's just so many factors that we're in the dark about.
Right.
So another thing I wanted to ask you about is I think there's some misconceptions about what the Child Fatality Review Committee can do and what it can't do. Does the Child Fatality Review Committee have any investigative authority of its own? Can you look behind what agencies have done, in particular what CFSA has done in a particular case, talk to witnesses, review data on your own that you're not provided?
No, we don't do the stuff that you're talking about. Some people are there from different agencies like MPD and CFSA, and they will add to whatever the staff has found and add some knowledge. And very occasionally, we will bring in someone to talk to the whole group. It's pretty rare. There just isn't the time for that, but it does happen from time to time. Typical case, we would just spend an hour and we just read what was given to us by the staff.
The report indicate that they examined deaths that were called into the hotline, and it doesn't state whether or not those were all of the deaths that they knew about, whether there were any deaths they knew about that for whatever reason were not called into the hotline because either the family or MPD didn't call the hotline regarding the death. We just don't know the answer to that. And then also I wanted to point out that if the death is the first time that a family has come to CFSA, that child death would not be included in this report. What we just found out, actually, is that there isn't any mandated reporter training in the district. There's no standardized training, and it's not mandated that anyone...
Really? That's interesting.
I'm sure MPD officers and health officials get some sort of training, but we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Is we could just get clarification from CFSA. Is it possible that if a child died and MPD may not call it in, and if that were the case, that that would not be included in this report? Or if a family member called it in to their in-home social worker because there's already an in-home case, but nobody actually called the hotline about it, would that be included in this
kind of
report? I don't know that we know the answer to that.
Right. I don't know if we know the answer. And I really don't know. You're right. You make a good point. I don't know how good the police are about calling everything in. The ones I would be really worried about, and particularly because I heard about something like this, is if it happened in another state, chances are CFSA would never find out. So they've moved, right, even to Maryland or Virginia or somewhere further, right? People certainly move, particularly to Maryland and Virginia. They might not find out about that, too.
They could still live in D.C., but just happen to be over the line into Maryland or Virginia when the death occurs, and CFSA wouldn't know about it, right?
That is possible because it's another police department. Yeah, that's a good point, too.
Marie, specifically with regard to how the CFR unit did their internal report in 2019 versus how they've done it in previous years, do you have any recommendations on what you'd like to see done with regard to amending this report or with their reports going forward?
My first recommendation was just that they should go back to covering all the fatalities reviewed. And I think I talked about that enough, but I think that there's no sense losing information, keeping it from the public. You know, it should be all there because these statistical calculations that they do, and I don't know if they do that internally using all the cases that they review, but it should be there for the public to see, like how many of them were due to natural causes, how many were due to abuse and neglect. And then we should be getting the same kind of information about those missing cases, which is what they did in the past, and I don't know why they didn't do it this year.
Okay, so there's 20 dead children out there that the public doesn't know about, but that CFSA does.
Mm-hmm.
Looking a little bit more broadly, what would you like to see changed with regard to how child fatalities are investigated in the District of Columbia, and then how those investigations are reported on to the public?
We need to know more, and I think that we really need, at least in cases where there's some contribution of abuse or neglect over the life of the case, whether the final result is due to abuse or neglect, we need to see individual case studies. The public needs to see that with all the names, of course, redacted. And that happens in quite a few states. In some cases, it's required that a state agency do that and put it on their website. And in some cases, it's done by an independent ombudsperson or child advocate or inspector general. It would be better to require CFSA to do that than nothing. I'd rather see it, those case studies, even if it were done by CFSA. But I would rather see it done by a neutral party because I think then we don't have an incentive to make the agency look better. The Illinois Inspector General for Child and Family Services, they do a case study of each of these deaths where they go through all the stages. And the most important thing to see in those case studies are what are the points where something could have been done differently. And that's often the most critical thing, is find these touch points where, oh, this is the place, this is the critical point where the wrong step was taken. So I think it's just really, really important for people outside the agency to have access to that. So I would like to see that being done by an ombudsperson or independent analyst. I just think that that's important, because what we're getting here is you have to kind of do detective work to see, okay, so what was going on here? Because they're just giving you statistics. They're saying three of the kids died this way and four of the kids died this way. And then they're saying three of the families had this many reports, and you can't connect them and say, here's one family, they had 10 reports and this is what happened and this is how the child died. I think that's really important. I'd like to see those case studies.
I agree 100%. Just the idea to me that this isn't the least we owe these children. These are children who have been failed spectacularly by the district, such that they have lost their lives. The very least we owe these children is an independent investigation.
Yes.
So one thing you talked about was the need to know more. And right now, there are confidentiality laws that prevent the public from knowing more about what goes on in the Child Fatality Review Committee meetings. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not allowed to share anything that occurs in the meeting. I don't see any identifiers, so I don't know the names or anything like that, but I'm not even allowed to say we had a case of such and such happening and this was the involvement or this was, you know, I'm not allowed to say any of that to anyone.
You can't even provide de-identified information to the public about anything that you know about what goes on in the committee meeting or any information that you get.
Right. The committee itself issues a report, and actually the report is very similar to the internal report. It doesn't do case studies, and it's very much statistical. You know, well, we have this many that died of this, this many that died of that. I'm not allowed to share anything about what I'm learning.
So ostensibly that is to protect the privacy of the children and the families involved. So my question to you, as somebody who served on this committee, is do you think that level of confidentiality actually serves that function of protecting children in the district? And if it doesn't serve that function, who is being protected by the confidentiality requirements being so strict?
Of course, I don't think it serves the children, because I think the children who are alive today, and we want to keep them alive, they deserve for us to have the maximum information so we know how to improve the system. I think the confidentiality rules may protect the families to some extent, but I think who they protect is the perpetrators who did something really bad. Now, others may not be people who did something bad. Maybe they needed help to do better at supervising or getting health care for their children or whatever. I don't know why, though, releasing it without names would hurt them. Maybe someone could figure out who they were. I just think that's kind of far-fetched. And I think in the really egregious cases that get covered in the paper, yes, I can actually figure out what those are, because I save all of those cases when I read about them. So yeah, I can figure out what those are. So those cases, they're in the papers. So I really don't think we're protecting the families. Let me say that this applies to all states, because they're all very, very similar. Some have been required to release this information, but none of them wanted to. So I'm not blaming the district. This is just the way it is. To some extent, it protects the agency, because no agency wants its failures to be covered in great detail. And so I think that these, and I'm not the first who said it, I think these confidentiality requirements do protect child welfare agencies around the country more than anyone else.
These committees only review death of children, but would there be any benefit to reviewing near fatalities?
Absolutely, and that's very much recommended by many people. I think the National Child Fatality Commission recommended that, the one that came out several years ago. But that has been often recommended, because what's the difference between a fatality and a near fatality? Absolutely, I think that would be extremely useful.
Is there anything else, Marie, you think that we should know that we haven't addressed or that you wanted to talk about today?
No, I think we've covered it pretty well.
All right. Well, thank you, Marie. We really appreciate you coming on again as our special guest, and we look forward to continuing to work with you.
Well, thank you both so much for having me on, and I'm happy to come back whenever you want me to. So, I appreciate it.